Moto America fans, it's time for another episode of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you may even learn something from this unlikely pair and their special guest. The mic is yours, Paul and Sean.
Hello, everybody. This is Paul Carruthers. I'm the communications manager for Moto America, and this is our weekly podcast, Off Track, with Carruthers and Bice. I'm joined, as always, today by Sean Bice, who's out in Ohio. I'm in Southern California. We're apart by miles, but together with bonding and love and hugs and kisses. So, Sean, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to this Road Atlanta run coming up where, you know, I'm going to drive down to it. It's a little bit of a drive, but I actually do enjoy it, especially with the way things have been going with travel. It's always nice to jump in a car and just kind of go when you want to. So I'm looking forward to that a lot. It's going to be good.
It's always exciting to go to the first one. And our guest today actually is going to make it even more exciting. And I'm really looking forward to that. I won't say who that is yet, but we'll continue to talk for a few minutes before we bring him in. But there's nothing like the first one. And I think Road Atlanta is a good place for us to get started. Hopefully the weather's good, but I'm sure it will be. We have a special night for the fans in downtown Gainesville on the Thursday evening before things get started. So we'll have some riders out there and give people a chance to meet some of the riders and also some people that are just like wandering around town that aren't really sure what motorcycle racing is all about. It might give them an opportunity to see what we're up to and come out to the track for the weekend. So that'll be kind of a fun evening to get things rolling as well while we're out there.
Yeah, you know, Paul, it's funny how we went to Road Atlanta later in the year last year, and I remember we were so worried that it was going to be truly hot Atlanta as it goes, but it's nice to get back to going there, you know, earlier in the year when it's not quite as hot, even though we had a great round last year. It felt like it was more springtime then, and looking forward to that, hoping we're going to have a clear weekend of weather. It's funny, I'm sure you watched the Masters, as did I last week, and just to see that green grass and how beautiful that is there, it got me kind of stoked for this first round for sure.
Yeah, it's always a good place to go. It's it can be hot, but I think the time of the year we're going, the weather should be ideal. It's springtime. I think we'll get a bunch of people to come out and see what we've got going. But let's go ahead and bring our guest into the show. For those of you who have been living under a rock, I'll explain a little bit about the fact that we have a French rider coming to join the series this year in Loris Baz. Looking at his bio, he's ridden virtually any series you can think of in the world. This guy has raced in it and he's done well in it. He's going to be a great addition to our series. We got to know him a little bit at the recent COTA test. He's a very professional guy. He understands what we need. He understands racing. He understands promotion. He gets it. He's an individual that you can tell is going to be nice to work with this year, Sean. I think he'll help us a great deal in promoting our events and promoting our series and especially promoting it worldwide. We've had Tony Elias here in the past and that was a great help as well. And I think he's going to do great things here. So let's bring him in. Loris, welcome to both Moto America and welcome to our podcast.
Hi, Paul. Thanks. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Loris. Hey, Loris, let's start off right off the bat. I talked to you a little bit about your name at the COTA test and screwed that up royally because I listed it. So a friend of mine who told me something, but I was looking at your bio and the fact that one of your favorite riders is Loris Caparossi must mean that you were named after him. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Exactly. I'm born in 93. So I'm not that old when you make the introduction with my bio and looking all I did in my career, it seems I'm 10 years older, but I'm only 28. So yeah, Loris was world champion 1991. So my dad was a big fan. So yeah, my mom agreed on the name.
So racing, motorcycle road racing is big in your family then. Obviously, if your dad named you after Caparossi, then you were born into a family that has a passion for it. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. Especially my dad and my granddad that I didn't know because he died when I was pretty young. But yeah, we have blood in the engine on my dad's side. I come from a place in France up in the mountains where the only way to go is snowmobile in the winter, quad in the summer, or motorbike. So I'm basically born with an engine between my legs, and I always rode quad and bike. The godfather from my sister used to have a team in 500cc GP in the 85 and 90s with Christian Saron. My mom was cooking in the hospitality for Christian Saron. So we have a lot of stories with racing in my family, and we've always been close to that. My dad never really had the opportunity to do it when he was young because he had to work really young, but yeah, he always loved that. And I have the same passion as him since I'm born. You know, the only thing I always wanted to do was racing bike.
So, Loris, this is actually something that I was really, really excited in and really excited to talk to you about. During the off season, you had done a post of you on a snowmobile. And I was telling the guys, you know, in our Southern California based office, you know, I was all excited about that because for me, and I've told this story a few times on our podcast, but I grew up in Northern New York where winters are long, and we did have some ski areas, but probably not quite what you had. But my first foray into motorized power sports vehicles was snowmobiles, and we rode them, and that's why I love motorcycles. It came out of snowmobiling, and to see you do that post when you're on a snowmobile, I was like, this guy totally came from an area where snow is a big deal. So is that kind of like similar to some of our Canadian riders we've had over the years, like Miguel Duhamel or John Cornwell, who was a crew chief for Attack Racing. He was in Canada and he's very adept at snowmobiling. Did you do quite a bit of that? And do you still do quite a bit of that?
Yeah, exactly. That's the first thing I ever did, to be honest. Like I was not even 2 years old and I was riding snowmobile. So that's the first memory I have with an engine. And that's still one of my favorite things to do when I'm off the track and I'm able to do it at home. I just love riding my Polaris in the mountain. It's just the best thing. It's one of my favorite things. Honestly, I have so much fun doing it, and I try to do it as much as I can. And I'm really hoping I can sort some good ride here in the US at the end of the season, because I know the place here to do it is much bigger than when I'm born. But yeah, it's basically the same with me. When I tell where I'm from in France, people are like, oh, why are you riding bike? You must be a skier, you know? Everybody's a skier where I am. I just wanted to ride bikes. So, you know, the engine passion come from the snowmobile, definitely.
Okay, I can see the beach from my house, and I grew up in Australia and then Southern California. So I've never ridden a snowmobile. So I'm sorry I can't contribute to that conversation, but
you have to try it.
Yeah, I would love to try, because we used to do it when I worked at Cycle News. We did a jet ski magazine, so I did a lot of jet ski testing. It seems kind of similar, at least the big ones, you know.
Yes. So yes.
I would like to try it. Loris, last year you finished eighth in the World Superbike Championship, and everybody thought you had a great year. You did have a great year. And then there was no team, no ride for you to go to in 2021. Was that a surprise to you, or could you see that coming?
Well, it was a strange situation, to be honest. It was a great season, really, really strong season. Could have been much better than I had, but we were really taking it race by race, trying every race. That was the target with the team. But yeah, from round two in Jerez, I had a 99% deal signed. You know, it was all done and we just had to sign the next week. And then next week became another next week, and it just went like this. And then, slowly the thing disappeared a little bit from my hands, and until the moment where in Maniku, where the grid weekend, 10K told me that they were not sure to continue without a sponsor, and but they were really close to sign a sponsor. But yeah, COVID was here too, and it was not easy for to find a sponsor at that time. And yeah, slowly the things disappear. And yeah, so I just decided to, yeah, I had a couple of offers to stay in the World Superbike, but I don't want to ride at any price. You know, I want to, I love racing, but I don't want to do it at any cost. And I want to be able to fight in front and to have a strong package, strong team. And I was not, yeah, was not the deals that I could have was not this, and so I just decided to wait. And I think at the end it was the right decision to not rush into anything, to just wait a little bit, because then we had a great deal coming and with a great opportunity and a great in a great championship like Moto America with Ducati behind us. So at the end it was worth waiting.
Do you see the fact, okay, you've come to America, you're going to race in Moto America, you've had the first test, you have your first race coming up. Do you feel like this is a fresh start for you? Because I know Tony Elias came here and it was a fresh start for him, and he fell in love with America, and he's still here. Now, I don't expect you to marry an American girl and have children here and live here, but do you see this as a fresh start for you in your career and something you can really build on?
Yeah, my girlfriend will not be happy for sure. But, an American girl. But no, yeah, for sure. You know, I always, it's not the first time I do this kind of choice in my life. In 2011, I was in World Superstock, just one step below the Superbike. And I decided to go in British Superbike because I wanted to discover something new and to learn different bikes and different series. And at the end, that was a massive step for me to go in World Superbike 1 year later on a factory Kawasaki. So it reminded me a bit of this, like making some different choices than most of people. I'm not scared to move. I'm not scared to discover new thing and to go out of the comfort zone, let's say, because... but this one, yeah, it's even a bigger challenge than 10 years ago because it's... like England is only an hour from home. Yeah, America is a bit more, especially with the COVID and all this thing. But yeah, I'm sure I will enjoy a lot. And I have some really good people behind me here at the team, all the people I get to know since I'm here from 1 month. Bobby, all the sponsor from the team, the mechanic that came from Europe with me. So yeah, I'm really, really happy and excited, and I'm sure it can be a great project. I didn't, honestly, when I said from the beginning, I didn't came here like I was not looking for something to end my career. You know, I told you I'm only 28, and I really wanted to have, like I was really trying everything to stay in World Superbike. But I say if I have to go somewhere else, I will only go if it can be a jump to come back in World Superbike, maybe in a better position than I was. And I'm sure if we bring the title back to Ducati after so many time, I will get another go in World Superbike. So that's the target. I mean, everybody agree on that. And I'm sure we can have a strong season with the team.
You mentioned the strong people behind you and the team behind you. What was your feeling from the COTA test? Did you... As far as the other riders go in the Moto America series, do you feel like did they embrace you, or do you feel like, oh man, these guys don't want a French guy to come over here and win?
No, honestly, like yeah, it was pretty nice, and I know a couple of guys that I will be racing with, and I receive a lot of message and things when we announced that a couple of months ago, and yeah. Let's say it was a warm welcome. But then, yeah, when I was on track, I'm sure everybody, I could see that everybody was more looking at me than anyone else and trying to go with me on track. But that's funny. That's the funny part. And I was just trying to focus on my job. It will be a really big challenge for us. We have so many things to learn. We don't have a lot of experience with this bike. And but for sure, the potential is really high, and we just have to we have to learn and to walk faster than what we should normally in every season, because we don't have a lot of tests. But I know we show in COTA that we were already on the right pace.
Well,
Boris, can you take us back to give us a little insight into how the team was formed? One of the things with Paul, you, Paul and I, you saw in person at the test, and you can kind of see that we've been around a little while. So we know the 90s, the era when Fastby Faraci was the name in superbike racing, or one of the big names, and Araldo Faraci is legendary in America. And obviously he's also well known in Europe. And, you know, it sounds like he had quite an influence in putting this whole thing together. Can you talk about like Araldo and what his involvement is? And then how did it happen that who called you? How did you get involved in this whole thing with Ducati Corsa and Bobby Scheck and all that? Can you give us some of that insight?
Yeah, it's a big group of people, honestly, in this team. And as you said, Faraci is a legend, and the logo Faraci with the Italian flag is known all over the world, and he's a really big legend in Italy, in Europe. So I knew who he was, and that's the first contact I had. Araldo called me. I was doing some snowmobile, so I could not answer. And then I called back a couple of hours later, and he was really happy that I called back. So he just explained me that. And then I just called my manager, who was already speaking with Bobby. So I think Bobby's call at the same time as Araldo called me. And that's it. They told us about the project. At this time, I was not thinking at all about going in Motor America or anywhere else than World Superbikes. So, you know, not really convinced at the first call. Went to sleep. I woke up the next day and I was, I was sure that I had to do it. We just had to make sure that all the bike was, that the bike was good. The team was good, high level, with a good, great support behind me. Some great guys to fight for the championship. And that's, we made sure, we had a couple of calls with Araldo, with Bobby, with Paolo Ciabatti in Italy. And yeah, we pretty soon, like in a couple of days, we had all the guarantee that I wanted, you know, like just to be sure that I had everything in my hands to fight for the championship. And then we signed pretty quick. I think the deal was made in 1 week or so. So it was pretty quick. So yeah, it's so cool to have Araldo around. Bobby is really a great guy. He has a strong team. Like, you know what you need to win, and he's not scared to invest and to put the investment where he need to be made. And then we have Araldo like a team manager, ambassador, and it's already also the main contact between Italy and us, because he's 85, but he's still, like, when you talk with him, it seems like he's 50 years old, and he's aware of everything, and he know everybody at the factory, and he's the one calling Paolo to make the team debrief after the test. And so that's so funny. I love having him around. I went test there the other day, like last week in New Jersey, and he was the first on track, and he spent the both day there. He cooked for us at lunch, and I told him, oh, I'm going Virginia next week. I'm sure you don't come. It's a bit far to drive. And he said, no, I will come with my company. No worries. I come. I want to see you. So that's just so much fun to see him in the paddock. And I just want to do everything I can. And we all have the same target will be so fun, so much fun to have. Will mean a lot to have the first title since 94 for Ducati. He was then the last one. And it would be so cool that nearly 20 years later, he's the one bringing it back. So I think we have everything also. All the sponsors from the team I met are really involved in the project. Ducati New York, Warhorse, they are really 100% in the project. And they're even out of the racing, they're doing everything they can to make me feel like home, like everything I need, you know. The main thing when you move really far is to try to get back to a routine training. Like the riding bike and racing bike is the easier part, you know. Training outside is the hardest one, and all these guys are trying to make me feel like home, so I just can focus on what I have to do to be ready when race day comes.
So let's talk about the test at COTA a little bit. So it's at a track that we normally go to, but we're not going to this year. It's a track I believe that you've been on before in the past. So what was the mission going to that test? Because you know, the main purpose, according to Dunlop, is to test new tires. But I know it's about fast laps too. And you know, you want to kind of be the man of the meet, so to speak. And you set the pace early on with the, you know, some laps under two in the 208s. And for a while there, it looked like, oh my gosh, he's just, you know, obliterating everybody. Well, as time went by, the other riders came up, and four riders were under that, or within that 208, along with you and Bobby Fung ended up going just a little bit quickest, but there weren't Q tires there. They were only race tires, except for there was a red striped, super soft, I guess, rear, which probably helped lap times. Didn't get a lot of endurance out of the tire, but what was your purpose in going there? Was it to get the fastest lap, or was it really to get race simulation and acclimate to the bike? I mean, or was it all of that? Can you tell us what the team's strategy was there?
Well, honestly, it was nothing of that. It was just like a first test that you usually do in November, you know, just trying to make the right fitting on the bike, to feel comfortable on the bike, and just to make some long runs to, like, it's the best thing to learn the bike. Trying to understand the reaction from the bike, and I felt pretty comfortable from the beginning. Every run I was improving the lap times, but I was not so much looking at it. I just, like, every session I was making some change on my fitting, handlebars, footrest, seat, the some things on the tongue to be more comfortable on the brake. So we didn't make any change in the first day, just a couple of millimeters of preload and things like this. And yeah, at the end of the day, I was pretty fast, looking comfortable. I was feeling good on the bike, and I was just able to improve every session. But I really never pushed really hard to make a lap time. I was just enjoying riding the bike. And then the second day, I just wanted to focus a bit more on the longer run, because it was hard to feel the drop of the tire in the first day, how long I could feel the tire was nearly new, and then the drop. So I just wanted to understand that. It was much cooler the second day, much more windy. The bike is really reactive. We made a small setup just to try to feel how the bike react. And the bike is really reactive. So we went back and just trying to understand how the bike react over the wind, cold conditions. So we just made some long runs. And then at the end, it was mainly the focus of the second day. And then, I think I'm the one who made the most laps. I did some really long runs, and but never really pushed for a strong lap time. I mean, it was not the moment to do it, because we already have a lot of job. We have only two or three. That was maybe the only test before going in Atlanta. So it was really important to make as many laps as possible, to have all the info I need in the head to make the change maybe we want for the next time on the bike. Also being able to think about this test during these months between the test and the race, to be able to be better on the bike when I come back.
Okay. Unless I'm wrong, and I've been wrong before, maybe one time, the last Ducati you've ever ridden in, or the last Ducati you've ever raced, was a MotoGP Ducati. So I don't think you have any time on Ducati Superbike. So this Panigale V4R is new to you. How does it compare to Superbikes you've ridden in the past? Because some people say, oh, it's very difficult. Some people say it's not very difficult. And what is your opinion on that?
Well, yeah, the only Ducati I rode was the last one was the 2015 Ducati MotoGP spec in 2017. That's funny, because the base from the V4R is a little bit made on this bike, even if it's really different. But yeah, when I jump on bike, the engine character remind me a bit of this. Also, the tires are really stiff, so it remind me of the more of the MotoGP tires than the Superbike ones. And yeah, the bike is completely the opposite than the one I was riding last year. You know, the V engine is completely different than the 4.9 from the Yamaha. And the strong point from the Ducati is mainly the engine. So you need to understand this and to use the engine, because you can have as much horsepower as you want. If you don't use it, and if you make the corner the same as you do on the Yamaha, you're never going to use this power. So that's why I'm saying it was important to make this test to try to figure out how to ride the bike. And I think all the experience I have in my life, I've been riding nearly every brand of tire, bike, and every series in the world nearly. So it's really important for me to try to put all the experience, all the knowledge I have, to be able to figure out what I need to do on the bike as fast as possible.
So, Loris, one of the things that's changed over the past 10 years that I've noticed, and this is sort of in people in general, but, you know, especially in motorcycle road racing, you know, smaller guys usually race motorcycles. I mean, Kenny Roberts, you know, Wayne, certainly Danny Pedrosa, Tony Elias even. But, you know, we have a lot of riders in our paddock. I mean, Jake Lewis, Nolan Lampkin, there are some guys that are well over 6 foot. Even Matthew Skoltz is over 6 foot. And here you come in, and I was told you're about 6'3.5", 6'4". Well, I looked it up and it said a meter 92 or 95, I think, which is around 6'3.5". You're a tall guy, and I saw it straightforward. And I see when you're on that bike, which isn't a huge motorcycle to be on, and you've ridden so many different motorcycles over your career. Have you ever felt that your height has ever been a disadvantage, or do you think it's an advantage in when you ride? Because, you know, it obviously doesn't seem to affect your speed or ability to get around a racetrack. So just talk to us about that a little bit, and your comparison versus other guys in the sport.
Yeah, so I'm 191.5. So that's the exact size. I know it pretty well because, as you know, like we've been talking a lot about that when I was in MotoGP and when I wanted to move there. So that's 6.28 exactly. So that's the size. Honestly, I don't know. You can't know if it's good or bad. I mean, I never thought it was bad. I always been much taller than everyone I was racing with, and I never seen that like a disadvantage. You know, I always trying to find the advantage from that. I think if you at the beginning in any sport think that you have a disadvantage compared to someone, you already lost. I never had this in mind. I'm sure there is some strong point being tall. To move your weight around the bike, especially on the Ducati, you need to put sometimes the weight in the back and sometimes the weight in front. And I think it's a bike that works pretty well with the tall guys. Scott Redding and Chaz are really tall. So for me, it's just normal to be tall. I've always been taller than everyone, and I'm used to this. And I'm used to stretch myself to look small on the bike, to try to be the most aerodynamic that I can. And that's just part of my routine, you know. If you really want to compare, you need to ride a bike on Saturday being 6.2, and the next day you need to ride being 5.7, and you can make the difference, but that's not possible. So, I mean, you are what you are, and you just have to do the best with how you are, and you need the guys that understand that that's the main thing. You need to work with guys and people that understand you are not the average rider, and you need different things. And that's the main thing, you know. I know that I need some stronger spring. I know that I need some different things, and then I'm able to ride as good as the other guys. If you give me the bike from a 50 kilo rider, I will never ride it. But if you give me the bike, I need to be to ride being the tall I am and the weight I have. I mean, that's not a problem at all.
Okay, the majority of our races since 2015, when Moto America started, have been won by Cameron Beauvais and Tony Elias. There's a lot of people who think, and Cameron Beauvais last year had a dominating season, won the majority of the races and won them quite easily. There's a lot of people that believe that Loris Baz can do that same thing here. And by saying that, I mean come in and dominate the series the way that Cameron Beauvais dominated last year. You rode with those guys at COTA, you tested with them, you're on the track with them, you get to see them a little bit. Do you believe that that's going to happen, or do you think it's going to be very difficult?
Honestly, I'm here to win. I said that from the beginning, but I know it's a big challenge. I don't take it easy at all. We have to remind that Cameron was winning, but he had like maybe what, I don't know, correct me, but 10 years in the championship, something like this. He knows the tracks really well. He was 5 or 6 years in the same team with the same bike, and we will arrive at the first race with 2 days testing. So that's a big difference, you know, like the experience you can have from the tracks and the bike at the tracks. But still, I know we can do it, and I know it's just a different challenge. You know, we will not arrive on Friday FP1 having already the setup from the bike from last year and knowing everything. We have to learn everything on Friday and make Saturday a bit better, and then a race day on Saturday for the first race to make it to be strong. You know, most of the track, we will have to learn a lot of things on Friday. Even the track I know and that I will learn, we'll have to set up the bike, some change. So we don't have a lot of, even if Ducati is helping a lot, there is not a lot of track they've been to with this bike. So this is the biggest part of our challenge. But I said that from the beginning. I'm here to win, but I know that there is tough guys and really fast guys in the paddock, you know, like mainly the two Yamaha, Bobby and Matthew. So, also, I think Matthew, even if it was a bit inconstant in the past, but Jake, Bobby and Josh are the three fastest guys. They know the track really well. They know the bikes really well because a couple of years they're on the same one, even if Josh was not there, but he already rode this bike a couple of years ago. So it will be a fun year for sure. But yeah, we try to win with the as much as I can, and we have one target, is to bring the title back home, and doesn't matter if it's by a few points or a lot of points.
You mentioned learning the tracks a few times in your last answer. Going into this, is that the most difficult part that you face, is going some places you haven't been?
Yeah, for sure. It's a challenge. But I mean, Ben Spies didn't know a lot of track when he came in 2009, and he still won the World Championship, and he won a lot of races at those tracks he didn't know. So it's a big challenge, but nothing, it's impossible. And you need to take it step by step and to keep calm on Friday, learn the track. I will try to learn as many as I can. I already learned New Jersey last week. I'm going to Virginia next week, and then Pittsburgh. So it will be already free. For sure, I will have to learn Atlanta on the first race. But then, I will try to learn as many tracks as I can. So yeah, that's part of the challenge for sure. But yeah, I knew it. I knew it when I was signing it. I knew I know why the team called me to come here. I know what's their ambition or what's the target. And I have exactly the same as them. So now we just have to do the job.
Loris, so what this, I guess as far back as Kenny Roberts, when he went over to Europe, and the riders have gone over since then. And you mentioned Ben Spies, who I know is a hero of yours. And we look at that season he had, 2009, is being incredible, especially from the point of view of, we always hear when an American rider goes over to Europe, there's so many things that they have to get used to with regard to things like the culture and the food. Well, let's flip it around to the other way. We know famously, and Paul has mentioned this, that Tony Elias came over here and embraced America, did from the beginning, and is probably going to spend the rest of his life here. Tell us about your situation. You mentioned you had a girlfriend. Are you living here now? Are you going to be living here during the season? Will you go back home? Is your girlfriend here now? Is she going to be coming over? And what happens after this year? Would you hope to continue to race in this series? Or is this a stepping stone to something else, almost regardless of what you do this year? But, you know, what is your plan kind of right now and going forward?
Well, at the moment, I came here alone. The plan is to try to bring a friend next time I come back, and to make a couple of way back to Europe during the season. So I think I will go back after Atlanta, and then trying to go back when I can, when I'm free. I mean, it's not too bad. I'm in the East Coast. It's only 7 hours flight, you know. The flight to go to Austin was even nearly as long as the one I need to go back to Europe. So I will try to to go back as much as I can, but also I know that the main thing is to do everything I have to do here to be to perform and to win races, and then when I can go back, I will go back. So yeah, I'm living here by the team at the moment. It was the easier way to come here, to be close to the team, and with my mechanic too that came from Italy. We're in the same situation. So yeah, it was really the thing was made in the last moment. You know, it was made in February and I left in March. So for sure my girlfriend could not come because she's still working, studying in Switzerland, and she have some exams coming, and then yeah, I will I'm doing a lot of things with my parents and my family in France, so but yeah, I'm lucky to have some good friends, good family, and especially a girlfriend behind me that understand that this was the best thing for me, and that I have to do this, and they just follow me and help me a lot with this. And luckily we have FaceTime, so it's easy to see each other. And then yeah, for the future, I don't know. I mean, I'm just here to do this season at the moment. I told you I don't see that as like end of career. I just want to. The target is to win and try to get a factory ride in World Superbike to be able to win again in Superbike. But we will see. We never know what the future brings. You know, I can tell you really, really well that it never brings what you expect. So it's always a new thing. A year ago, or even less, I was never expecting to ride Moto America in 2021. And here I am. So we will see. And for the moment, we just have to do this season. Try to win this championship, and then we'll see. Maybe I'll stay for another season. Maybe I'll go back to Europe. We will see.
So I want to ask you for a scouting report right now. I saw on social media that you were at New Jersey Motorsports Park, and it took me a little bit to realize, and you helped us by letting us know that was a V4S that you were on. So I was like, wow, you know, I just did a story a week ago about the fact that they just put in some new pavement there and new sealer on that track. And you were on that track on a V4S in the damp, pretty wet conditions, it looked like. So with all that in mind, and tell us about, give us a scouting report on that track from your point of view of probably never having been there. And also, did you ride on that new surface? And what did you think?
Yeah, it was the first track that they have since last year. So, you know, like every time you go on a new track, like a track that I haven't been rode for a long time, you need to put some rubber on to have a good grip. But I was really enjoying the layout of the track. I really enjoyed it. They make some new, new surface somewhere. Some of them are really bumpy coming in. So I think they need to change a couple of things again for the race. But yeah, basically I enjoyed a lot riding there. We did one day on a bit wet in the morning, then dry. And the second day I did a couple of sessions on the full wet. So yeah, I enjoyed really a lot. And it's crazy to think that the Ducati V4S was in the crate 2 days before. You know, we didn't change anything on the bike. We just put the first gear up, and then that's it. I was riding there, and I did, I don't know, nearly 200 miles or something like this. And I was enjoying a lot. So it's cool to have this opportunity. You know, like I tell you, the team is doing everything they can to make my life easier when I go on a race week, and that's part of the thing. So we just take the van with my mechanic, put the bike in, fuel, tires, and we go on the track. So remind me back in 2007 when I was doing this in 600 with my dad. You know, I could not race that year because I was too young on a 600, so we were just doing track days and track days. So that was remind me of the old days.
That's fun.
Okay, we're going to let you go here in a minute. I have one last question for you. You haven't been here that long yet. I know you've been here before. I've seen you at Laguna Seca, et cetera. Living here for the little bit that you have, what is your favorite part of America and what is your least favorite part? And I don't mean the area of the country, but what service or food or what have you is the best, and what do you think is the part that you're not so fond of?
Well, the most challenging, honestly, coming in America is the diet. You know, I'm always like, I don't have any diet. I don't have any restriction. I'm eating everything, but I just take care a lot about my weight. And so I'm taking care about what I eat. And it's, you have a lot of temptation here. It's so easy to go in a restaurant and you just take a salad and it's the double of calories than the burger. So you just have to be careful. That's the hardest thing. But I'm used to this because I love to cook, and I'm cooking at home when I'm with my girlfriend. I cook all the time, and so many times I just cook something for her and then something for me different, just to be lighter. So I'm used to this. But here, yeah, it's the main thing, especially because I tell you, my mechanic came with me, and we go a lot. Like we went in the first month a lot out. We've been 2 weeks in Austin nearly. So we went at a restaurant like twice a day, and he was taking like burger and all this thing every day because he just enjoy it. You know, like I would do the same if I was not a racer. That's the bad thing of a racer. That's part of the job. So in the end, you just have to take care of this. So that's the main thing. But all the rest is really cool. I mean, I enjoy Discover the World. People always tell me, what's your favorite place in the world? And I'm never able to answer because I love every place I've been to. I think I'm lucky to, I did 3 years in MotoGP and maybe 6 in World Superbike or more. And every time we go to a new place, I'm someone that really enjoy trying to discover this. And like, yeah, I told you, like I do a lot of cycling and running, and I've been cycling here, and the people on social media were just telling me, from friends were just telling me, oh, you don't miss your mountain too much in this flat country. And I was like, man, it's not that flat. Check the data on Strava, and it's so steep. So it was funny, you know, and taking the bike around is a really nice way to discover the country too. So that's the thing I really enjoy at the moment, is just to discover new places, new people, new culture. And is that also part of the nice thing that I will have all this season?
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad you're settling in. And yeah, one of the things you do notice when you come from another country is not just the food, but the amount they give you, like the portions. You know, you order a salad in Europe and it's a salad, and you order a salad here.
Yeah, exactly. And also you order a Coke, and they refuel you, like they come back with another one as soon as you finish.
That right, you end up having 20 Cokes.
Yeah, that's not like this where we live. So that's the different things. But I tell you, it's not like I'm used to it, and I'm used. But it's just, yeah, that's the biggest thing, because when you come to a new place, you always want to eat some, like to discover things. And but yeah, I had a couple of nights cheat meals, and we had some really good Texan barbecue in Austin. That was really awesome.
Okay, well, Loris, we appreciate you coming on the show. When we get off here, I'll put you on my Strava so I can make sure you're doing 5 miles in that climbing. But I know Sean's got to say some things to tell our fans. But again, thank you, Loris, and good luck this year. It's going to be a pleasure having you in our series, and I think we'll have a lot of fun.
You're welcome. See you soon. Thank you.
And Loris, I also want to thank you, and you were a delight to have on. But I want to say one thing I realized. So I'm pretty fascinated a lot of times with names and spelling of names. And I think with my last name being B-I-C-E and yours being Baz, I think our last names are actually the same if it was translated. So I think my name is actually, yeah, I'm Sean Baz. I'm Sean Baz now. I'm not Sean Baz.
Yeah, Baz, exactly.
But anyway, thanks a lot. And hey, Paul mentioned this at the top of our podcast that we're going to have a kickoff party on Thursday night in Gainesville Square, which is real close to the track at Michelin Raceway, Road Atlanta. It goes from 6 to 8, and some of the riders will be there with autographs. And we did it last year, even amidst COVID, and it should be a bigger deal and better deal this year. I mean, we're going to have autographs set up, you know, riders there, and some demo stuff. And it should be real good as a nice kickoff to the weekend of Road Atlanta, which is April 30th to May 2nd, our first round. And, you know, tickets are still available. So go to MotoAmerica.com and get your race weekend tickets. And also for the listeners and fans of Loris Baz around the world, please subscribe to Moto America Live Plus and get our subscription streaming service, and you'll get to see lots of track time out of Loris with practices, qualifying, and the races, of course. And it streams to a smart device It's been pretty popular around the world. We've heard a lot of good feedback for it. So Loris, for your fans everywhere, that's a good option for them to watch you race. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, guys, you have a good day.
Bye.